First, I congratulate you all for being on time. It's nice. The other is not nice, not being on time. Is there anybody here that wasn't here for verses 5 or verses 6? Then you want to have to do like it, start from zero all over again. Okay. You know who is Rupa Goswami? Very good. Tell me, who is Rupa Goswami? Okay. What else can you say? What else is he known for besides being one of the six Goswamis? Who was his brother? One of the six Goswamis. You have five choices. His elder brother was? Starts with an S. Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami were brothers. Sanatan Goswami was the elder. And in Vedic culture, the younger brother treats the elder brother with great respect, like one treats, practically, like one treats one's father. So Sanatan Goswami was treated by Rupa Goswami as his superior. And yet, amongst the six Goswamis, this is another thing to know about Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on two occasions said that he has invested all of his transcendental potencies for realizing his teachings and for writing his teachings unto Rupa Goswami. And that's a lot of transcendental realization. So he is regarded amongst the six Goswamis as the most exalted, or following Lord Chaitanya, the preeminent follower of Lord Chaitanya amongst all of his awesome associates. He's next in line in our disciplic succession following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as he was instructed by Lord Chaitanya to write transcendental literatures based on the teachings that Lord Chaitanya explained to him, he did. Foremost of those writings is a vast literature which Prabhupada made a summary study of and called it Nectar of Devotion. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This one is much smaller. It's just 11 verses. NOI stands for Nectar of Instruction, or Upadesh Amrita, Nectar of Instruction. And here's a little overview. Of course, we could discuss a lot about Rupa Goswami, which we did the first 2 days, but here's a little summary. Now, I've been informed, or reminded, I guess, that when I was here previously, I didn't cover verses 1 through 4, I covered verses 1 and 2. So, anyway, we started with 5, 6, and now 7, and then we're going to go back tomorrow evening to discuss verse 3. And then Wednesday evening is a Bhagavad Gita class at the temple, and then on Thursday evening is text 4. Okay? Because text 8, as I already explained, it's way up there. It's describing Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. And, you know, you need more than an airplane to get up there. You need a rocket ship to get up there. That's really high. So we're not going to be discussing text 8. We're just going to go back and do text 3 and 4. But to show the sequence, text 4 is discussing 6 loving exchanges amongst Vaishnavas. Recently, I received a letter from one devotee saying, "When you speak, there's such emphasis upon loving relationships. We had a whole retreat in Giranagari on expanding the network of loving relationships based on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And there's a reason why it's essential. It's besides its common sense. The goal is love for Krishna, Krishna Prema. Goal of our process is Krishna Prema, which means loving relationship with Krishna. And can one have a loving relationship with Krishna without a loving relationship with those who have a loving relationship with Krishna? The way that Prabhupada said, love me, love my dog. Loving those who are dear to Krishna makes one dear to Krishna. So, and you'll see within these root writings of Rupa Goswami, loving relationships is text 4, text 5, text 6, text 7. 7 deals with, okay, we'll see. So, 6 loving exchanges. There are things that are favorable, things that are unfavorable for achieving bhakti. And once one has achieved bhakti, there's relationships with those who have achieved bhakti, or are at least in the process of cultivating bhakti. And that's text 4. Text 5 is how to associate according to levels of advancement. We discussed beginning, intermediate, advanced. And they're Sanskrit terms. Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama. Beginning, intermediate, advanced. And remember those charts, well, at least those of you that were here. There are different ways in which one can view beginning, intermediate, advanced. And one of them is in terms of chanting, which we're going to be doing today. Beginning, intermediate, advanced. Stages of chanting. Knowledge of the scripture, beginning, intermediate, advanced. Faith, beginning, intermediate, advanced. View of Krishna, beginning, intermediate, advanced. Advanced is, they see Krishna everywhere. Everything, Krishna and everything in Krishna. And they see it, not just like, oh, that's a nice idea, what's next? It's their consciousness. Bhagavat darshan. They see that way. And based upon the positions of one's advancement, or spiritual position, one should offer respect. And then in that way associate by offering respect. So there's a whole paragraph about that. And then with the pure devotee, Pure 6 discusses further how we should associate with devotees, especially with the spiritual master who is understood to be transcendentally situated, neglect of which may ruin one's spiritual life. So we discussed that one. And now is in terms of chanting. It comes back to this, but in terms of chanting, there are stages in chanting. In order to come to the Uttama Bhakti platform, we must first cleanse our consciousness from the beginning to the intermediate to the advanced through the process of chanting. By carefully chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day, we gradually become cured from the jaundice of ignorance and revive knowledge of our blissful constitutional position as Krishna's servant. So that's our topic. Chanting, the effect of chanting to elevate the soul to the topmost position. So We can chant the verse together. Syat Krishna Nami Charitani Sitabhya Vidya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Rarochikano Kintva Darad Adudanam Kadu Saiva Jushta Sadhi Kramad Bhavati Tad Gadamulahantri. And the translation I'll read. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet, like sugar candy, although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, or ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet. It is wonderful that simply by chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. Somebody's head is in the way. There we go. Thank you. So, that's the verse. And that's a part of a painting of Rupa Goswami writing his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu at Ter Kadamba. And he wrote one verse in Vidagdha Madhava. There's the Sanskrit. And let's just look at the translation, which says something very similar to this text, number 7. Very famous verse. This is an invocation verse to his drama, Vidagdha Madhava. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When the name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of a heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. So first, it's how one regards the holy name, as it's just this source of incalculable nectar. Then the chanting, the hearing, and entering into the chamber of the heart, the courtyard of the heart. The mind becomes, we did discuss it in this morning's Bhagavatam class. It's such a nice verse. So this is the appreciation of one who's at the topmost stage. In the verse, it gives the analogy of jaundice. When someone has jaundice, the whites of their eyes don't look white. They look yellow like this. So the jaundice-like condition of the living entity is the condition of living entity being covered by ignorance, or avidya. And just like when one has... Has anybody here had jaundice or a liver condition?
When
you were young. Same?
Yeah.
And did you take the treatment of rock candy, mystery?
Not here.
Not then.
In India, we don't eat oil. My mom did.
Okay, aside from that oil, did you take mystery? No. No.
I did Ayurvedic.
You did Ayurvedic. Well, do you recall the things sweet didn't taste at all sweet? No.
No.
You don't remember?
I
do.
Okay.
I didn't get jaundice. I was the first time I was visiting in Vrindavan, I got purified. I remember we were at Fogel Ashram, and that one mosquito. Said we were warned about mosquitoes. We might get malaria. And sure enough, he got malaria. And yeah, that was an interesting experience. But for sure, what Prabhupada says is true. Rock candy tastes like neem. Rock candy doesn't taste like neem, but it tasted like neem because of the jaundiced condition, the liver condition. So similarly, due to avidya, that which is sweet, sweeter than sweet, tastes not sweet, bitter, no taste for the holy name. And seeing yellow tint, it's a similarly, in the avidya condition, one doesn't see reality properly. But by gradually taking the medicine, as the disease decreases, the sweetness returns, or the ability to taste the sweetness returns. And then, from in sequence, the verse speaks, nama rupa guna lila, in sequence. So sometimes devotees ask, when chanting, should I do something other than pay attention to chanting? I got a creative one. I'd like to imagine something, see a picture or something. So, the teaching of Rupa Goswami and Namacharya Haridas Thakur and all of our acharyas is the form of Krishna will appear within the mind of one who hears Krishna's name with undivided attention. And then not only the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, even the pastimes of Krishna will be enacted depending upon the quality of one's chanting. So there's a disease and the medical doctor gives a prescription or a cure. And according to Rupa Goswami's description in this verse, there are three important words which we're going to detail. Adarad. You should carefully follow the prescription. And you should do it regularly. Anudinam, every day. Or, if you can, 24 hours, 7 days a week. Don't sleep. Don't eat. Don't do anything. And chant. But if you can't do that, chant every day. Chant regularly. Anudinam. And then, the steps of progress, they're gradual. Kramad, krama, means step. So step by step, gradually, the disease becomes cured and the healthy condition is returned, restored. There's a beautiful picture of Radha Shama Sundar. And as the name of Krishna and the deity form of Krishna are not different than Krishna. All sweetness is there in Krishna's name. So, how often should we follow, receive the prescription? How carefully should we follow it? If there's regular cultivation of our absorption in the holy name or participation in chanting of the holy name, then because the medicine is good, the doctor is good, the cure, the diagnosis is good, we're victims of Kali Yuga, by regularly taking Anudinam, taking this medicine, and then gradually, just like the blossoming of a lotus flower, when the sun rises in the morning, the lotus opens and opens and opens. So similarly, the stages of bhakti are identified this way. Shraddha, sadhusanga, vajanakriya, anarthanivritti, nishtha, ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prema. 9 stages, one following the next. Each of the stages, the same thing is required. Just like in Sri Brahma Samhita, there's a description of different types of Krishna's pastimes. One is his manifest pastimes. Each day of Lord Brahma, Krishna shows his pastimes. Those same pastimes as are found in Goloka, Krishna performs in this realm in Bhoma Vrindavan. And that's one kind, his manifest pastimes. Then there's another kind, his unmanifest pastimes. Because his pastimes are eternal, sometimes they're manifest and sometimes they're avyakta, they're not manifest. So, in Sri Brahma Samhita, there's a description how even today one can experience the unmanifest pastimes of Krishna. You with me? Not just wait, you know, for another day of Brahma. Now, one can experience the unmanifest pastimes of Krishna. One can enter into and participate in them, if you're highly qualified. And the means of, one of the means, there's two described. One of them is mantra upasana, and it's something that we do every day. At least those of you that participate in programs like we have in our temples. All of our temples participate in them every day. There are verses from Sri Brahma Samhita that Mother Jamuna sang, that George Harrison orchestrated. Right? Venum kanvantam arvindalaya taksham. So this is a particular mantra that, according to Jiva Goswami, commentator of Sri Brahma Samhita, it's a particular type of mantra called a mantra upasana type of meditation. And by meditating on a particular pastime of Krishna or aspect of Krishna, one can experience what Brahma experienced, is Krishna's pastimes, his eternal unmanifest pastimes, even before there was a universe for Krishna to enter into and show his pastimes. He experienced those pastimes through the mantra upasana process. And those that have received second initiation, there are two mantras of the mantras that we chant that are also mantra upasana mantras, that if you become sufficiently purified, you can experience your relationship with Krishna, your spiritual identity, your activities in relation to Krishna through that process of mantra chanting. And it's something that we do every day. So let's just say somebody comes to a temple as a newcomer, and the deity curtain opens, and as we do in many or most of our temples, we play the song of Mother Jamuna. It's a recording of her singing those two verses. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti and venum kanvantam aravinda dalaya taksham. Seeing the deity form, meditating on the mantra. And that experience for a new person is something. And then somebody that's been practicing for 3 years, 5 years, it's another something. Somebody that's been practicing for 10 years, 15 years, it's another something. Somebody that's deeply absorbed in this process, it's another something. So the activity is the same at the different stages, like here. But kramad, gradually, the jaundiced condition is reduced, and in that normal or healthy state of consciousness, we approach the bhava and prema stages of bhakti. This is what's recommended by Rupa Goswami in this verse. Now, there's another painting of Rupa Goswami and his writings here. While the Yuga Dharma, the means for this particular age, is chanting, and he's speaking about it in verse number 7 about chanting, but please note that this verse comes after three other verses just discussing relationships. 4, 5, and 6. Relationships, 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 Yuga Dharma. Does that tell us something? Relationships are important, and acting in a way that's pleasing to Krishna, that's what bhakti is, in those relationships is very important for advancing in bhakti. Here's a verse by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he's praying, a verse about chanting, "O Lord and Master, please give me the power to properly honor all living beings. Only then will I sing the holy name in great ecstasy, and all my offenses cease." So having proper relationships, having a proper understanding of the importance of relationships and how to engage in proper relationships with devotees will help us chant properly, help us get the full benefit that the holy name is bestowing upon us. In the purport of Nectar of Instruction, these some additional points. Real disease is in the heart. He writes, if one's heart does not change, this is a quote from the scriptures, Padma Purana, I believe. If one's heart does not change, tears do not flow from his eyes, his body does not shiver, and his bodily hair is not stand on end as he chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it should be understood that his heart is as hard as iron. So, you know, not any one of us has a patent on iron hearts. We all have the same condition. This is due to his offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord's holy name. It's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 8. Just after, in Adi Lila, chapter 8, there's the Padma Purana verse where there's the offenses against the chanting that are identified in Padma Purana. So one of his engaged, quoted in Nectar of Instruction, text 7, the disease, the jaundiced condition, is the heart. Ignorance covers our heart. It covers how we see Krishna and those in relation to Krishna and Krishna's holy name. In a similar way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the covering of the holy name. In Harinam Chintamani, he writes, the holy name, like the sun, dispels the darkness of illusion. However, sometimes clouds or mist cover the sun from the viewer, so that only a portion of light comes through. In the same way, when ignorance and anarthas predominate, the sun of the holy name becomes covered and only a portion of the full effect of the name is felt. That's us, by the way. The clouds and the mist, there, that which arise from offense, the avidya that covers our consciousness. So, how do we get more light from the chanting of the holy name? The acharyas teach us by attentiveness. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Haridas Thakur, they all say attentiveness is the root antidote to dispel the coverings of the holy name. The jaundice-like condition is corrected by attentiveness. And it's, of course, the mind is wandering, and so that's not being attentive, we're being inattentive. Anarthas are burnt in proportion to our attentiveness. And we're almost done. This is a nice little chart that takes us through the purport where stages of chanting are presented. See that little box down in the corner, pretty dark? That's where we begin. And it's where there's offenses against the chanting of the holy name. And there are 10 in number. And if one tries to avoid the 10 offenses, then that's called like the dawning stage or Nam Abbas, where the stage of lessening of offenses, or Prabhupada would sometimes call it the clearing stage. When the clearing stage takes place, the dawn, a little bit of the morning light of the sun can be seen, a little bit of the power of the holy name can be experienced by us, a little bit of taste comes through, and thus the beginning of sun rays comes into our existence. And as we continue striving in the clearing stage, so it's a long clearing stage, but as we continue to clear, then we approach the pure stage, or Shuddhanam, and that's compared in the purport to the full blazing midday sun. So just like that, going from darkness of night to dawn, first rays of the sun coming over the horizon, and then full midday sun. As the sun rising has those stages, so also the chanting of the holy name. If we continue trying to avoid the offenses, and specifically trying to be attentive, trying to hear with undivided attention the sound of the holy name, then the jaundice-like condition is relieved. And that's the last slide. At the center of this whole effort are Radha and Krishna. The holy name is not different than Radha and Krishna. The Gayatri mantras that are described in these mantra upasana verses, they're also centered on Radha and Krishna. And they're specifically, their potency is to bring us to loving attraction of Radha and Krishna, and beyond the bodily conception of life, beyond false ego, beyond duality, into the realm of our eternal relationship with Krishna. You read in Brahma Samhita, Brahma realized his spiritual identity. He realized that his real identity was that of an eternal maidservant of Krishna. That's our Lord Brahma of this universe. Just from properly chanting his mantra, he did it for a long time, 1,000 celestial years. And, you know, we just 2 hours a day for 16 rounds. It's like pretty minimal. But it's because we can't take more. If we can take more. Increase. Come to the festival of the holy name and chant more. Well, it's going to have a real nice time. Just found out today, the Spanish devotee, I think he's like from Spain, Atmaram, you know, plays guitar and sings very, very nicely. He's coming. Badaharius, star of the show. We're going to have not just one Harinam, but two Harinams and a kirtan medley and all kinds of nice, very nice activities together. And then our, you know, very coveted, because it's only half a day, 32 round. But by the end of that experience, you know, a lot of the coverings will be removed. Or at least you'll be far more clear what the coverings are and how thick they are. But that immersion in the holy name can carry one beyond the covered jaundiced condition towards the Uttama Bhakti stage that was described in the earlier verses, specifically in verse 5. So this is how to get to that higher stage. And that's text 7. And then following text 7, comes in that purified condition, spontaneous devotional service. Beyond the regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti into the Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti stage. We'll do that another time, not this visit. So any comments or questions? Manoj, can you get some water? Suja, save us.
just for a clarification, so while chanting, so we have different ideas, like what really we have to think of, just the Maha Mantra, or we can think of pastimes, or we can think of feet of Krishna, or place of chanting.
You were paying attention, weren't you? Remember I said, sometimes people say, should be this or should be that, and what the objective is, one thing, hear the sound. Whatever helps you hear the sound, do that. The difficulty is you invest attention over there, a picture or face or feet, invest attention over there. And your attention is going over there, not to the sound. Whatever helps, be attentive to the sound. So it doesn't mean you have to close your eyes. You can't see a deity form, and you can't see a picture. That's a no-no. Whatever enhances attentiveness to the sound. So, for example, if there's an image, and you know the Maha Mantra is going around in the image, but the center are Radha and Krishna. Or you've been at japa retreats where Radha Damodar are there on the altar. You've been to a japa retreat in Kidanagari, or you know if you're there on Sunday and there's Kishore Kishori. So there's a deity form of the Lord. You see the deity form of the Lord, and you're chanting to the deity. It's the sound, and you're and a prayer to the. So the heart opens in various ways that it's to not take you away from the sound, but to enhance absorption in the sound. There's the sound form, there's the deity form, there's the picture form. There's pastimes of, but the password is the sound. That which helps attentiveness to the sound is to be done. Since nobody's asking questions, I'll just go on some more. You know what a binary processor is, a computer, a one or a zero? So the mind is like that. If it's this, then it's not that. If it's that, then it's not this. Because the mind is a binary processor. Computers are just patterned after the mind, which is a binary processor. So if you're being attentive to something other than the holy name, you're not being attentive to the holy name. So whatever helps being attentive to the holy name, do that. Whatever it is, something to help that.
Because with the mind, it is really hard. Sometimes it is like with the picture sensation, this easily gives the divinity what we are chanting. So in those times we can just help the mind, so we can think of fish.
The accepting and rejecting barometer or valve or criteria, is the mind being more attentive to the holy name, or is the mind not being more, it's not whether the mind is more, you know, feeling more calm and satisfied and not complaining so much. That's not the criterion. Attentiveness to the holy name, that's the criterion. The mind can be screaming. If attentiveness to the holy name, so like some a calamity, for example. People that are in car accidents. Devotees are sometimes in car accidents. Many of them, they live. Many of them, they come out without a scratch. The car is totaled. But when the calamity is, the car accident is happening, they're screaming the holy name. Or at least chanting very loudly. So, intensely taking shelter of the holy name is good. Doesn't have to be a calamity situation, but that which brings absorption in the holy name. So, to say, well, the mind likes lots of other things. So if I give the mind some other thing along with the holy name, then my mind will cooperate more. So it may or may not quite cooperate more. The real criterion is attentiveness going to the holy name. Chances are, it's going to something else, if it's something else besides the holy name. So, next time you're doing, you're looking at a picture or something, giving your mind something that makes it, quote, easier, test yourself honestly, and is it to something else that your mind is going to, or is it the holy name that your mind is going to? If it's the holy name, then continue. And if it's not, then put on the brakes and go to the holy name. That's the criterion. It takes a lot of practice, it takes a lot of discipline. That's okay. To achieve anything, it takes practice and discipline. You want to do anything, ride a bicycle, or type on a computer, or whatever it is. Drive a car. Take practice and discipline. A lot. How important is what?
Like chanting the holy names. Like some devotees chant fast, some devotees chant slow.
I know what Prabhupada said, and I know what my experience is. But what's important is the mind stays attentive. So, Prabhupada said, by chanting swiftly, it forces the mind to be attentive. But then he qualified, not so swiftly that you cannot hear every syllable. And loudly, you know, one should chant audibly, not so loud you're disturbing everybody else around you, but loud enough so that it captures the hearing process. So some people chant more softly. One devotee that was asking about this, she said she noticed, it was Premananda, noticed because Badahari, after the last festival of the Holy Name, stayed at their house because he did the Art of Kirtan seminar and stayed at their home. And when he chants, Japa, he chants softly. And she said, I noticed you also chant softly. I didn't notice that I chant softly, but I guess so. And so it's not like softly is, that's it. It's, you know, whatever helps you be attentive. Some person's chanting more loudly is fine, more softly is fine. Unless you're in assembly and then too loudly, then it's not okay because it's disturbing others. But loud enough that you can capture the mind. And fast enough that you can capture the mind. But not so fast you don't hear every syllable. Because, you know, you can go slowly and slowly and slowly and slowly, and then the mind is wandering. And you go faster and faster and faster, and then your mind is... So there's some place in between where swiftly is good, but not too swiftly. Prabhupada's standard, he said, in the beginning one may take 7 minutes per round and later you may take less. So like 16 rounds in 2 hours. My chanting takes more than 2 hours. And there was a time when it was chanting in around 2 hours and a little less than 2 hours. Now it's taking longer. And I'm not like, you know, now I get a B minus and before it was an A. It's you know, attentiveness. I find if I chant more swiftly, I'm not, you know, it's just more about how swiftly I'm chanting than it is about hearing. You know, but that may change over a period of time, and that's fine. You know, there are some persons here that were chanting in an hour and 20 minutes, and, you know, was wondering, wow, yes, I'm hearing. So I suggested, you know, this is something that all of us can do. You make a recording of your own chanting and then listen to it. You ever done that? Here's something, if you do that, here's something you'll find. Preparing to record your own chanting, you'll be really attentive. And then when you hear the recording of your own chanting, you go, what? I better, you know, because you can. Then here's another one. And we do, when we do Japa retreats, one of the exercises is you chant and another person listens to your chanting. And then critique. And then switch roles. The person who's listening chants and the other person listens to their chanting. And critique. We're going to have another exercise. So, I've had the feedback, or I mean, the experience that people say that was like the most powerful part of the whole Japa retreat was having somebody listening to my chanting. Because I, you know, now I realize I really have to be attentive while I'm chanting, because Krishna is listening. And for this festival of the holy name, we're going to do something like that, only kind of like, you know, a little even more challenging. But we'll see if you come. That won't spoil the exercise. It's something we did at the Seattle Japa retreat, and when we did our feedback session, it was the most powerful part of the whole Japa retreat. And we're going to repeat it in Chicago. It's going to be on Saturday. If you can't make it for the other days. Preparing for the 32 round day. So if it's, you know that someone's listening, or even higher, you know that Krishna's listening. And then that Krishna's not only listening, but Krishna's feeling something. And Krishna's responding as he's feeling. I mean, you know, it's a relationship with Krishna. So, if you put your question in that context, how important it is to chant fast? It's not important to chant fast. It's important to chant with really paying attention to Krishna. And for us, it's the sound of Krishna. It's the most accessible form of Krishna, Nama Prabhu. As the deity form, it's also very accessible. Even more accessible is the holy name. And Prabhupada very kindly made the literary form very accessible. Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. You think you've got a challenge. Go ahead.
Maharaj, just a kind of clarification. So one of the purport in 8th chapter, Prabhupada writes, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra contains Omkar Mantra.
Why not?
At the same time, Om represents the impersonal feature of mantra, that means...
Everything is within Krishna. Can you understand that statement? Everything is within Krishna. So Om is within Krishna. Everything is within Krishna. Okay? When you say, there's the sun, it means there's the sunshine, there's the sun globe, and even there's the sun god. There's the sun. Everything is there. Yes.
There are different stages, starting from Shraddha to Prema. So, in the third stage, it says that when you take initiation and engage in devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, then the person is free at the third stage. So, does it mean that if somebody hasn't taken initiation, they're still only in the
stages? No. Thank you for asking that question. These are a linear way of thinking would say what you're saying, or using a vernacular that people like these days, buckets. It's not there, you know, you fill up this bucket, and then when that's full, then you move to that bucket, and it's empty, and you start filling it, then you get that full, and then you move to that, the next bucket. It's not like that. Not like that. They're progressive and continue to mature. Each one continues to mature. Each one continues to mature. So in other words, even in the... Anarthanavritti is taking place even in the sadhusanga stage. And... Shraddha is developing in the Nishtan, Ruchi, and Asakti stage. It's categories to help us envision the unfolding of the creeper of bhakti. But it's not that, you know, bucket thing, and it's not the, you know, you complete one thing and then you move on to the next thing. Exactly. They continue to unfold, and they reach down below and go beyond in both directions. Anything else? Yes.
When we chant for a long time and then we have been practicing, and then we still feel we have not progressed enough, or
how do we motivate ourselves to keep going on? Well, there's a number. You go to a japa retreat. That's one way. You recognize that my effort alone is not enough. That's a nice realization. So now, what's beyond my effort? And that's, I require some extra mercy. So a mood of prayer to Krishna and to the great devotees of Krishna, to be kind. And, you know, and they, when that prayerful mood is there, not only mercy comes, but mercy comes even in specific ways, like teachings. And then one can in that recognizing I require descending mercy mood, the teachings can then help you go beyond your own effort, because there's some descending mercy coming in the form of those teachings. I can just share a couple of things that have in the recent while helped me. Just that prayer of Rupa Goswami. Who can say how much nectar the two syllables Krishna has produced? So I have found that a meditation on, you know, first is what the holy name is, and then the act of chanting the name, then the act of hearing the name, and then the act of receiving the name in the courtyard of the heart. And so it's taking some assistance from Rupa Goswami, is associating with Rupa Goswami, receiving some mercy from one who knows what the nectar of the holy name is. Although, on my own, it's not happening. Or, the Shikshastakam verses is Lord Chaitanya's gift to guide us in the process of chanting. So he's extending his hand, or his mercy. And so, receive it. And it's part of bhakti to do so. It's not only the activity of chanting, it's the mercy that comes with the name and the guidance of those who are guiding us in how to chant the name. And by that prayerful mood, feeling oneself dependent upon descending mercy, the heart opens. I know that steel-framed heart thing that we read about gets softened, and then something beyond our own effort, because our own effort, a lot of that is acting through false ego, the doership mentality. Here's the thing, and I'm going to do the thing, and I'm going to get the thing, because that's what we've been used to. Doership mentality. And the bhakti principle is a different principle, and I'm so glad it's a different principle. But we can't approach it with the same horsepower or the same mechanism, the same mentality. It's it's a dependent receiving mentality, and there's service, but we're in the service. We're depending upon descending mercy while we're serving. And who is to be, it's just a change of mindset. Who is to be pleased by this? Is it me or Krishna? And that's one of the things that we're going to be discussing in our retreat, or the 32 round day, that this festival of the holy name experience. It's the consciousness that we carry determines what our experience is in life. Here we are, a group of us, and the consciousness we carry is going to determine what our experience is. Or we're having kirtan. The consciousness that we carry is going to determine our experience of the holy name, of the kirtan. And we can only work with what we have, our consciousness. And it's covered and limited, etc., etc. So that, but the messages are there, the descending mercy is there. And feeling my own effort alone isn't—it's inadequate. It's something. I have to make some effort, but on its own, it's inadequate. So something more, much far, far more. Krishna, and the reciprocation comes at once. It's a change of consciousness. discussed it directly in the class this morning, Bhagavatam class in Chicago. Maybe you can listen to the recording. And if you are you going to be coming or not coming for the Festival of the Holy Name?
I'll be leaving to India on
the 3rd. Huh?
We're leaving for India on the 3rd of July.
Can't come.
Yeah.
Okay, it'll be broadcast live on the Chicago website. So there's the two classes on, I can't recall. I think it's Saturday morning and then Saturday late morning. The Saturday Bhagavatam class and Saturday late morning. Going to address this more. Yeah.
I have a question. Like, children sometimes they don't like chanting, I mean they cannot sit and chant. So is it okay to shift change chanting to kirtan?
Sure. Sure. But it's something like is done when we do college programs. Not at all college programs, but some college programs. They begin sometimes with kirtan. And sometimes they begin with round round of japa. And, you know, they don't have a taste for japa when they begin. But by doing and doing, like, they look forward to it. I was very happy to see when I went to Chicago for the Rath Yatra. Now that the college semester is over, one of the students at University of Illinois in Chicago is living in the temple for the summer with his mother and father's full permission, and I met his grandmother at the Chicago Rath Yatra. There in a wheelchair and, you know, patting her son on the back, saying, you know, he's a good boy. Because I was asking him, how do your mom and dad think, what do they think about it? But they're fine, they like, and this is my grandmother. And she said, he's a good boy. So how did it happen? Just, you know, the association, but also in the beginning, just chanting one round of japa. Or kirtan. There's others that just, so some introduction to the holy name, whichever. Because kirtan is easier in one sense because it's musical. It gives, you know, a little bit like this, you know, gives the mind something in addition to holy name to like, find attractive, the musical element that's attractive. It's not necessarily just the holy name, it's the musical element in the holy name. Okay, if it's easier for the mind, then, but make sure that the mind goes to the holy name. And a test of whether it's the holy name or the music is japa. It's just the holy name. And then some people, when instead of chanting japa, they kind of sing their japa. There's, you know, these, I have some discussions with some experienced devotees have observed that persons who sing their japa, kind of, you know what I mean, melodic and not, so they don't end up continuing with their japa for very long. It's not absorption in the holy name, in other words. It's more of a, you know, there's a mental feel good, and that's what's going on, rather than absorption in the holy name. But then you associate with somebody that really likes kirtan, just, you know, Badahari and Jai Jagannath are two that come to mind right away. And if you're sitting with them, and, you know, Jai Jagannath sometimes drives me to places. And there's always some melody going on. You know, he's humming. He's singing the holy name softly in his mind. Or another devotee in New York, without naming names, it's just their life is the holy name. So for them, it's not, oh, japa, what a drag. It's the holy name, not just melody. Melody is, you know, is a sweet way, and then there's the sweetness of the holy name itself. That's our objective. So, one of the ways to help where there isn't so much attraction to the holy name itself is as a group sits together, as a family sit together, or a group sit together, or something. Something is becoming, it goes on quite a bit these days, a fair amount anyways, is japa class, telephonic japa class. You know, between this time and that time, every morning, a group of people call into a conference call, they read something inspirational about the chanting, and then they chant. They're in their home, they're on a speakerphone or whatever, however they do it, and they're all chanting together. They hear each other's voices chanting, although they're in their home. So you're chanting in the association of others. And they do it every day. It's not like, oh, that was a novel thing, what's next? They do it every day because they get strength from it, chanting. So, similarly with children. Anything else?
Nothing, you wake still?
Okay. Okay. You want to sing a little bit? Okay. See the Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Prabhupada Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.